This is the Morning Crossfire on 92.3 Nigeria Info.
My name is Enogbevri. Thank you for joining the conversation. We're looking at the journey to Aso Rock. Some ministers have resigned and some have had to change their mind. Some Nigerians are concerned about that. If you thought you have the answer to Nigeria's problems, you thought you had the answer to moving Nigeria from where it is to where you think it should be, maybe some sort of repositioning, why did you choose to remain in office instead of, you know, launching out to save Nigeria? All right, so 10 ministers have tendered their resignations because the president gave a deadline, said by May 16, all of you who want to contest should step aside. All right? And the affected ministers, Uche Oga, that's Minister for Mines and Steel, Minister of State for Mines and Steel, Petroleum Resources, Timipre Silva, Minister of Labour and Employment, Chris Ngige, Minister of Transport, Chibike Amaechi, Women Affairs, Pauline Tallon, Godswill Akpabio, Minister of Justice, Abubakar Malami, Minister of Science, Technology and Innovation, Ubunaya Onu, Minister of State for Education, Emeka Wajuba, Minister of State for Niger Delta Affairs, Tayo Alasadura, and Amaechi, Wajuba, Ngige, Akpabio, Onu and Silva picked presidential nomination forms for the APC. And then Malami was to run for Kebbi State Governor, but over the weekend he pulled back. Says no. He thinks that staying on as the Minister of Justice and Attorney General is a better deal. No interest. Everyone all of a sudden seems to have consulted again with their constituents. So this Ngige, I'm not even sure. Is he still in the race? Okay, I need to confirm. But Chibike Amaechi has resigned. Timipre Silva has withdrawn. What's her name now? Pauline Tallon, she's withdrawn. Abubakar Malami has withdrawn. Emeka Wajuba resigned. Who else? All right, we'll get into the conversation. My guest is here, Dr. Nsika Kuntia. Good morning.
Good morning, you know.
It's been a while.
Morning, Port Harcourt, isn't
it? You know, the last time you were here, I think we're talking about COVID vaccinations and all that.
Indeed.
And I was talking to my friend in the UK yesterday, and he said everything has been relaxed. What happened?
The UK has been bold enough to go the way of treat this like another illness. Mm. You make a diagnosis, treat it. So the paranoia is gone. And indeed, when you look at the number of people who, have been positive but not even tested, the real true mortality is not as bad as we initially thought.
But a lot of people actually died.
A lot of people died, yeah.
But hundreds of thousands.
A lot more people got it. You know, so what I'm saying is that how in terms of how many people actually relative to the population that got it. So the question is that how much paranoia do you want to go? Do you want to go like China or go like UK? I mean, it's two extremes. But the UK is dealing with it because they've got high vaccination rates and they've got systems to treat people if they fall ill and all of that. So when you've got that degree of maturity in your system to deal with it, then it becomes less, you're less paranoid about that. You don't paralyze your economy. You don't hinder productivity and all of that. And then you're very clear that I will deal with it as it arises. And, you know, monitoring systems. That's what they've done.
And I hear it's now very expensive to have a test done abroad. A friend of mine paid about €400 in Germany.
So because fewer places are doing it, the government is no longer trying to put any subsidy around it. So it's an expensive disease. If you have it, then that's you. But the question is also a lot of people also relying on the rapid test as well. So they almost self-diagnose, and if it's not so, you're not so sick, you just, you know, stay at home. People know a lot of people know what to do almost without being prompted or monitored or you know, regulated, if you like, by the authorities. And that's the kind of empowerment that helps you ride the tide and get beyond it.
Okay, so let's get to the presidential candidates and those that, the ministers that had aspirations. do you think they needed to be told what to do by the president, giving an ultimatum of some sort?
So what I look at this is just like, it's like a fishing trip. You know, they're fishing, you know, BHI. So I throw this thing out there, you know, get some $100 million from somewhere and I'll get the ticket. Then I'm in the conversation to be negotiated with. It's how I see a lot of them. You know, rather than a genuine aspiration.
Negotiation, bargaining, do all of them really have chips?
I think sometimes when they say, you know, okay, who's in the fray? Okay, I want to get this guy to get out in case he's either sharing my constituency or he is popular in a way that it might affect my groundswell, or just to break my momentum, or he just likes to have him on my train.
So
this guy step down for me. There's all that. I've always thought that there was too much comedy and drama around, particularly the APC side of things. Mm-hmm. You know, it's really ridiculous. And then, I mean, that for a party that came into power on the back of anti-corruption, some degree of fiscal discipline and austerity, it's laughable that you would let your entry, you know, barrier sort of be so ridiculous. Nobody, who does that?
They've done it.
And they're going to get away with it. So it just shows, really, what are we about?
It's all a lie.
At this point, for someone who was almost bought into the the Buhari frame in 2015, I thought that, well, at least, you know, we needed some discipline and all that, and he brought that, and that was a huge part of that campaign. I did buy into that in 2015. I got sort of awakened by 2017-18 when things weren't going anywhere near like that. But it's just ridiculous how, I mean, some degree of decency should demand that I stand for something, and you know, there should be some consistency in that. He's lost everywhere else. There's no resemblance to that discipline,
but the body language that was touted in 2015.
It's completely gone.
So these people that have pulled out of the race, is it that, you know, that they have disappointed their followers, or is it that they really had nothing to offer in the first place?
What followers?
Our people are begging me, they've been consulting me, so, whispering to me, and I decided to honor them.
So the thing about this is that job is probably one of the toughest jobs,
in the world,
if you like. You know, also because essentially it's a very powerful position, but it requires the kind of dynamism that you don't just walk into. I don't think you just wake up and say, I want to be president next year.
Well, you wake up and say, I want to spend $100 million to get a phone.
So that's my point about what's the drama, what's the real story? Mm. All this money is just from everywhere. Rice farmers buying form for MFL. What is that? Well, you know, it's a comedy. So I think what's happened is that, all right, if I say I take away your ministerial position, if you're serious about this, you know, so that's the first test of seriousness. Like, I'm not really sure like that. Make a, you know, that kind of a thing. I don't want to lose the perks in only one more year of perks.
One in the hand.
Yeah, one more year of perks and all of that. And if I say, you know, yeah, it's all right, I'll consult again. Well, who are you consulting? So I think it's that game. And it almost helps weed out, maybe weed from chaff, if you like. But there's still a lot of them in the race, you know, sort of 25 return the forms. So I mean, 4 northerners, 21 southerners. So I'm asking myself, oh really? So it's really swinging. I mean, if 21 southerners are the ones that return forms, and then 4 northerners only in the APC thus far, you know, and deadlines is in, it just makes you say, okay, what's the
21, and they're making a case for a southern presidency shift. What does that speak of?
So I look at it and I'm saying, okay, is that a tacit deliberate move, like, okay, this isn't good, we're going to let this go? Because even of the 4 northerners, okay, you've got two northwest. The northwesterners are supposed to be out of the game because they've done this twice and all of that. But then you've got Yobe from Lawan from Yobe, and then you've got Bello from Kogi, who are not central and northeast, which are the ones who have never sort of produced the press. I mean, northeast particularly has been like, we never got any taste of it at all. And then are those false flags just flying? Because, you know, if he goes north, south, north, it comes down to a south zone, but maybe you can do the 6 zones about 30 years or something like that. Or something more. But what does it say about, is there an deliberate APC say we won't zone it by policy, but we would intentionally sort of take it down south? It makes it a bit interesting to see if that then does happen, and then does that get replicated on the PDP side, like in 99 when both parties just said, you know what, it's going to go to the west, and you know, we deal with the west. It's been interesting to see what the next few weeks bring. And I think both parties are waiting when you do your primaries and before I go and do mine.
For me, that's comical. You know, yeah, the primaries thing. Because INEC is even concerned. INEC was saying that 18 parties have failed to conduct primaries. They've got 3 weeks to go. Are you seeing a possibility of the politicians putting ANEC under intense pressure and some shifts would have to be made eventually, by this rate?
There will be shifts, no doubt about it. Because what's happened is, even in the initial forays, look at the number of court cases from the ad hoc delegates thing, you know, we could get on all of that. Once something happens, another group protests, you take it back to court, or to avoid the court division, you redo it and all that. That's happened for PDP, for example. So you would continue to see all that. It's just the infinite greed of man, and this is, you know, where they say you never know a man until there's power in the play, or there's money, or there's a new woman in their play, or something like that. There's the worst of man comes out, you know, dog eat dog, brother on brother, and that's probably what we're going to see through the primaries phase. It's when the when the participants are then selected, there's a bit of unification around that course. You know, either you will stay with your party or you go to the other one if you think you're very, very aggrieved. And that's also the next sort of level of play. But where they are currently, everybody's, you know, sort of jostling and trying to get their stuff. I mean, look at the Kaduna comedy, really. Mm-hmm. You know, everybody rules for Asuajo, and then Amaechi went and everybody said, no, you know what, now we rise for Amaechi. Asuajo is coming, so do we rise for Asuajo? I honestly, and I'm like, you know, but all of this is government. To be honest, you know, some parts of it is just government money being spent to do this stuff.
Nigeria's
money.
Public funds. Citizens' money.
Exactly. And it's why I think one of the things I've always held in my adult life around Nigeria politics is that I don't think we should do the presidential system. I just think it's way too expensive, and I don't think it makes us a better governed state, sort of. You know, I just really think we need to just whittle down the power and the attraction and the wealth around that system. You know?
Yeah, but if we look at the governors, they also wield enormous powers, just that they have in some way corrupted the minds of the people to believe that they're helpless.
They're not helpless. They wield too much power. Sometimes I don't think the governors have a better deal than the president.
Mm-hmm.
Because the governors have more leeway. They can handle their local issues better and all of that. You can't throw fluff bluff around at the federal level the way some of our governors, you know, especially if you look around, you know, would do. You can't do that. So the governors, to me, have a bit of an easier pass. You know, they can clobber all the local government funds into their pockets and then into their coffers, and then they can handle what's going on and all that and deal that. And they're not being the limelight of the entire nation, you know, so you don't have that kind of spotlight on you, you know, beyond a particular level. So the governments have it easy. So I mean, the entire system. So, you know, bring it down to where you are forced to debate and all of that. So if you, and I'm still a big favorite fan of the parliamentary system. We left that because of the imbroglio in 64, 65, but it was for the wrong reasons. What we changed to do does not solve that problem. It doesn't. Go back to a house where everything you want to talk about, you discuss it here. I agree, you can still pass all the envelopes around, but you're forced to debate. And once you debate, it's better. And then get your specialists to be there to deputize to the politicians, who are always, of course, the same thing, because politicians are the ministers. So if you want a technical guy and all of that, he can deputize, can be minister of that under this guy, but he's a technical kind of guy. I mean, whatever works, but it's easier. So I win my seat in my constituency, you know, and I go federal and all of that. I think it's easier, and then it also makes it easier to unseat as well.
Mm.
Because maybe, you know, I don't have to have a $100 million to buy a form to even think about it. It means I can actually start and say, hey, you know what, I'm popular in Obiapo. Why the hell would I not go against the grain and all of that, and have that, you know, independence and getting the free? I mean, look at Rabbi Kwankwaso in Kano. He's gone to NNDP, and it's a problem. Ganduje, everybody is like, oh my God, what's going on here? You know, because he's taking his personal popularity, and it's working.
Interesting. We'll talk about that, because some people have said, why are we having issues in certain political parties? If you're such a popular candidate, if you think people love you, they're going to vote for you anyway, why don't you just move from that party to another party? In the north, they've said it's something, but in the south, is it a different ball game?
Structure, government money. It's the structures that already exist, the affiliations that have been built over time. It takes a large amount of guts to be able to go it alone. You have to have the funds, you have to have the popularity, and even with that, you're asking yourself, all right, you know, would this work? Would the system work against me? So if it were simpler elections and you were certain the elections would count, you know, and all of that, and increasingly
they're always certain, because if incumbent governors usually run the local governments the way they like, and they have those people in their pockets, then it's a certainty.
So that's the thing. Around local government elections, for example, every winner is a party. It's in the party of absolutely of the governor. So that's why they begin to lock away that. Because I would think that if you want to do this thing seriously, then you start early. You know, go local, start there, distinguish yourself over there, move in, move up, you know, and all of that. So people can almost see your trajectory and what you've always stood for. And, you know, you don't learn to be left-handed at 40. So you can almost always see a trend. And this is what this guy is about. Mm. And I've thought that would really be useful to sort of with. If we're doing issue based or ideas based sort of politics, that might be good to look at all of that. Sadly,
we're not money force. Use money and we use force. I mean, Nigerian politicians use money and they use force.
Have you seen how nobody is talking about Nigeria's issues in any detail?
Nigeria does not have any issues. They just need people to sit in those chairs. That's all. That's the issue. The only problem we have is that we lack leaders. And now we are going to vote in the leaders. What the issues are, the leaders are coming to fix. Nobody cares about it.
You know, I mean, apart from Peter Obi, perhaps who tries to go into a bit more data.
Don't talk theory. No,
at least he's debating an issue, but the others, you know, like, yes, I will fix insecurity and that's it.
All right, well, stay tuned.
We take off with the biggest conversations with an exchange of opinions and ideas on the Morning Crossfire. Settle you into your day when we say hello, Port Hackett.
Take you on a ride to the sunny side of life.
Hover a bit while picking at the details on hard facts. Take a detour through the exciting world of sports.
And get back on track with Let's Talk.
Land you safely as we chit-chat into the morning on Chat Station. And then do it all over again on your number one talk, news, and sports radio station, 92.3 Nigeria Info.
This is the Morning Crossfire on 92.3 Nigeria Info.
Thank you for staying tuned. We're looking at the journey to Aso Rock. In another 9 months or so, it will be sorted. But we're here, and many rivers to cross, many hurdles, of course, to cross as well. Dr. Nsika Akintia, Public Affairs Analyst, is my guest this morning. Good morning again.
Good morning.
So, in the South, especially in the APC, we've got lots of, candidates that some people believe have what it takes. I'm not sure what Nigerians are basing their belief on. Is it because they like the person? Or the person has been around the political space for a bit. The APC, the PDP too, we have the same kind of, you know, sentiments towards certain candidates. What are your thoughts? Who do you think are those that people are paying the most attention to?
So, for me, generally speaking, in different ways, people just based on electability.
And in Nigeria,
the biggest factor in electability is the backing of the top brass, if you like, and all of that. And in Nigeria, in this election cycle coming through, that looking like, okay, you know, the Northwest is running for 8 years and they're going to put it down south, then it's like, who does that group back, so to speak? Essentially, for APC, for example, when Buhari drops his hand around behind somebody, then almost there's probably more alignment going to happen.
He hasn't done that.
It's said to be that it'll be a last minute thing if it does happen.
Yeah, we heard something last week about the former president, but they've left that trio cold.
Cold.
I think that's deliberate.
False flag. We call it in espionage. It's called false flag. You know, fly a kite here, see how people take it, fly it here. And then in the end, you know, they probably have exactly where they know exactly where they're headed. Mm-hmm. You know, but then it started out with Asiwaju Bola Tinubu being absolutely big front runner. He took off so fast, like a jet on steroids. Mm-hmm. And we've seen that the wheels have literally come off. Matter of fact, it's one of the ones I thought, you're so obvious. Everyone's seen you coming for the past 12 years, such that, you know, whoever is anti you can set and wait for you.
Mm.
And I always thought that deal that supposedly they're supposed to have made, you know, in 15 was always, you know, not exactly going to pan out the way when he was treated, the way he was treated around the nominations post 15 election, you know. But he stayed with the course and gotten to this point, and he's demanding that we had a deal.
Mm-hmm.
But the wheels are coming off. His closest cronies are falling apart. They're going away from him. You know, Jubain has even left him. His campaign DG has left him on the Yoruba side. Ralph Aregbesola has, you know, sort of speaking publicly anti-Tinubu and all of that. These are things we never used to see around him in the past. past the myth.
In charge.
It's almost being sort of pulled off. Because I thought he might be one of the ones that says, all right, APC, if you guys are doing your drama, I'm going to go resurrect one of my old party, what they do, an AD or whatever it is, and then just go it that way. Because he appeared to have the kind of clout and supposed electability on the, in the noose to do Nigeria's politics. But if that falls off the wagon, then you have other things. You know, people like Osibaji Amaechi and co. It seems that the thing about that is that, is Buhari going to back this guy?
Because that's for the APC, that's the defining,
that's the defining factor. Because if Buhari backs you, then the machinery backs you, and then takes you, that takes you into power, you know, and all of that. I mean, for example, Goodluck Jonathan going over, the pure thing is about, would Buhari back you? Because that's the only way you can even have a shot of it. So I'm wondering, but what's he looking for? You know, because it's so fraught with mishap, you know. You've been president already for 6 years, you know. What new high? And then if they say, come and get something on a platter of gold, you know, it's going to be fraught with conditions and all of that. It's going to be in shackles, even more shackles than it was when he was a PDP president. Mm. Maybe break a record for the president to be president on two party platforms. I don't know if that's the intent. But I kind of just kind of think that, dude, seriously, you know, wake up, smell the roses, smell the coffee. I'm not sure that's the best move for someone who attained some kind of statements, like, because you that is material.
Restless, yeah.
You know, and he can mine that for the rest of his life. Mm-hmm. And the retain that dignity of, at least, you know, I did it this way, and good or bad, there were good things that came and all that, and some bad as well. But this cannot, I cannot see it ending well. Okay.
So let's go to the PDP.
So with the PDP, it's a bit less clear in terms of, I think APC's drama has played out a bit more, you know, fully than the PDP's evolution. So with PDP, the question is the good old question, you know, and all that. Are they going to, for the loyalty of the Southeast, come down to that? That's not going to happen.
When you say loyalty, what exactly is that?
So it is thought that, I mean, historically, the Southeast has stuck. I mean, just like South, the way it used to be, solidly PDP has always stayed there in all of the ramifications back and forth here and there. And yeah, a few people. But generally speaking, you can come and say this is a PDP enclave. You know, South Africa used to be like, you know, it used to be, this is a PDP enclave. You know, and it's thought that after all of that, if you go all the way through from Alexa Kweme all the way through and all of that, you're like, hey, you know, this agitation, this marginalization that, you know, everybody claims, but the Igbos really have a big sort of, and all that, you know, give, you know, you should hand it to us. Now, power, nobody hands power to anybody. You know, you literally have to fight and go and grab it, you know. So, we've seen how that happened, and you know, and even on that side, you know, the question around a coordinated front and all that, it's not always with Southeast. You never really can land that and say this is a clear guy, and they're organized enough and strategic enough to align with all the other groups, because you can't wait and say we bring it to you. You have to kind of show that, hey guys, we can work together.
Yeah, but someone would think that the Southerners or Southeasterners or just the South by now, they should have
learned
yes, and perhaps but one person, because for as long as I can remember, people have said that they know one thing, that these people can never unite to produce a person.
So I listened to such a Okasa a while back, and he says something must to back one person. Give it to us and we'll come up with four. The system will produce the one person. But that's again the gimme principle, which it just doesn't happen. It just doesn't happen.
Even if they're giving, you think they can?
Yes, I know. If you give it, then automatically whatever happens. See, the problem is, and I have a problem with the principle.
Okay.
That just because, you know, I am from here, then it solves the problem. It doesn't.
Because they have their own problems in
the office. I don't even think you need the president to be from the region to change the region. You just need the right kind of system and the right kind of even local leaders,
local
leaders to change that. I mean, we can argue that we had good luck as a president's household, and I'm not sure we're necessarily automatically better off.
No, we're not.
You know, medium to long term.
And he apologized at the stadium here. He apologized, said, I've done nothing. When you re-elect me, I will.
There you go.
But then that didn't happen.
So it gets very sentimental when you go that way. You know, for me, and like I said, and I know you're going to can me again, but at least, you know, when I go through my news trails when I come from work, I stay on Peter Obi, because you almost always learn something. You may say theory. But at least he's speaking issues beyond just the general insecurity. Because everybody's always
all of a sudden here, everyone is talking about insecurity. And you start to wonder, how safe are the states? How safe are the highways to your state? How safe are your people?
Because it's the primary, the biggest thing that moves any rational human being is fear. It's fear. And we are in a place where when I was discussing with a few of my friends yesterday, and talk about what will a Nigeria implosion look like. It may not be a conflagration that might be war like the civil war, but it will be. And I kind of think that the nearest thing that we can get there in very soon was with the economic disaster that we are just looming around,
which actually is a major underlying factor here.
It now triggers chaos in every region simultaneously, local regional chaos simultaneously in every region. So everywhere you turn, there's this happening here, that happening here, and everybody else, like, my God, everybody just hunker down or take off, you know, that degree. And then you almost, then people begin to different groups own different territories, you know, in militia style, sort of. It begins to grow that, because that's what it is. Because when you have no clear leadership from the center, people tend to turn to local leadership. At least I'm sure that this one, if I pay whatever ransom, whatever, you know, I can live, I can do my business, or I can get on in within local
which is what I hear that some of the people in the southeast are doing. So they've taken over certain territories. People pay for everything. You want to have an event, you pay. They want money, you give them.
But that's exactly what it is. At a point in time, even in River State, there were parts of River State where
some Ospark people were doing that. Yeah,
you know, you had to sort of, this is the local government I know, sort of,
and that's the protectors. So let's give them
dangerous. You know, how it can possibly ruin the fabric of the actual true government in play. And when you have that over around so many places, you have the wrong kind of people in charge, because it's uneven, it's unstructured, it's chaotic, and violence is not ever far from how it expresses or holds itself together. You know, and violence is the lowest level of engagement for human beings, you know, which is why what Putin is doing is a bit funny, because it takes us back to, you know, wars, whereas it would have been economy betterment, you know, where do you compete on that level, and everywhere just sort of gets technology and all of that.
Sounds like what state should be doing.
Indeed, you know, just, you know, just change that narrative, man. I don't know. I just worry, you know, people mouth it, but it's getting almost worse everywhere. I don't know, and I look at a dollar every day, because how many people fall into poverty every day? Once that thing just shifts, if it shifts by 2%, 1%, it's like a trapdoor. People just go down, and then it's hard to come back up. Hard to come back up, because structure to bring them back up doesn't exist.
I don't know. I sit here every day.
It's PDP.
I sit here every day and I hear people express sentiments, and sometimes I think, is anyone thinking about what we should be thinking about as a people? Are Nigerians really thinking about their sufferings? That you don't have, I mean, I go around a lot these days, no schools. Then the ones that look like schools, they don't have chairs, they don't have tables, they don't have teachers. The environment is all overtaken by weed. Then you're asking, what are they learning? What are we showing them? Is there a future?
It's not an instance of the future. Where there's life, there is indeed life, and therefore there's a life.
Yeah, so there's the one tomorrow that you just described, that people just go down. That's a life.
It is. The question is there hope? Is there optimism? Can optimism thrive in this country? And I don't mean the false type, because you can come and promise the world, you can come and, you know, and all of
and
that.
Do nothing.
And people run to, you know, religious fervor and all of that, the opium of the masses and things like that. But the key thing is that, and what I like, and I'm saying that even if you only speak, you must know it to speak it. And that's why I talk about, I would like more of the guys running to talk more about agenda than this jostling for electability, for who's backing, who's not backing, and all of that. And that's why I say, sit down, tell me what you think, you know, is wrong, you know, beyond mouth and insecurity. And all of that. The insecurity, how do you want to tackle it? You know, nobody.
Banditry will stop in 1 week.
Do you want to go there? You know, but that's interesting.
No, we've heard those kinds of things.
Oh, but
banditry will end in 1 week.
But isn't that.
Nobody has said the economy will improve in 6 months.
APC came in on the back of that. It's our paper. We know the army. I'm ex military, so I know what it is done. Dollar will come down to 1 point. And all that, you know, noisings, and look at where we are today.
So that will make it more difficult for Nigerians to even believe those who are, you know, going to be trying to get into any position.
It's our biggest single problem. We have no trust at all for the government. So the biggest calling of any politician or political group is social mobilization. Okay. It's not, I know you say build road and all of that. That's basically expected, frankly. The key thing is that, can I mobilize people around a common cause of belief? The reason human beings are Homo sapiens and we are supposedly higher than the rest of the animals is that we need to believe in a single story. And that is that so that it shepherds our energies into one direction, and it's amazing what we can do when we cooperate across large numbers. And that's what it is. So whenever I see anybody that's divisive, I say you're not ready. Frankly, you're the lowest rung of
when leadership. You say divisive.
So part of what we've thrived on in this country is divisiveness. Most folks who've led and all that have used that tool to, and all of that. And that's
without saying anything real concrete, without showing any plan, any pathway, any blueprints, you just pick on the other person, pull them down, look for all the things that have.
And that's your play.
Because that's what the PDP has tried to do in the past years, but that hasn't even gone well.
I don't even know if they are different. Everybody's in. Yeah. I knew there was in PDPs and APCs.
Yeah, some are sweeping, some are holding.
But honestly, I just think that we need to be able to come out. And it takes some very bold, very strong.
Yeah, but beyond the aspirants themselves, the people. Mm-hmm. If people are still overtaken by sentiments, all kinds of sentiments, if it's not from our place, it will not work. And I ask them all the time, but the people that are from your place, that have been ruling your state, your local government and your House of Assembly, what have they done? Nothing. They've actually dragged you into that hole of poverty. You're disillusioned. Nothing is really working. It's just that, like you said, there's life. So based on that premise, people just wake up and go. Mm. No direction.
We need to show
so
them.
If your people are doing that to you, why is it really important where the person is from? Oh, for equity and justice. What?
We need to show them better. What I mean is, so I think there's something that, and it takes a lot of some time, some degree of tolerance to someone who perhaps is not your kin. It's like the pay it forward principle. I help this folk. I have no reason, no connection, nothing, but I do something good for this group and all that. And it inspires a feeling of, oh my God, if this one, what am I doing? In my own small way, too, can I? And that kind of ripple effect. You may say it's theoretical, but the thing about it is that, so you want to be able to come here and say, oh, you guys didn't vote for me, therefore I'm not. No, that's absolutely not. So you come and say, I kind of realize I didn't kind of get you guys, but can I sit with you guys and I kind of understand, I mean well, and I can deal with your core issues. I might disagree with your political
leaders. But the Nigerians communicate like that. You're sounding very foreign now.
Thank you very much. It's like blood sisters. But but my point is that, I'm sorry, you may call it foreign or not, it's a humane principle.
No, but I understand that clearly, but do Nigerians think like that? Do we receive information? Do we process information like that?
So your followers will tell you, after everything we suffered for, you want to go and do, no, you do it here or give it to us first. But then the bigger person in the room says, we've gotten into office now, we're thinking how we do medium to long. So I'm saying, you will get what's due.
Does anyone think medium to long in Nigeria, from what you've experienced so far?
We don't see it consistently across board, but there's some people that have done stuff and all of that. The people who in the small sort of areas and all of that. I mean, Fashola's time in Lagos, for example, was a really good time. And I think everybody kind of felt that, 3-4 governors and all of that. Adams, for example, for some point of part of the Ezodo State period, was a real difference from what it was. We need to be able to celebrate things, just bits and bits like that.
And if we have it in 36 states.
Peter Obi in Anambra was a breath of fresh air, over the back of the kind of crisis. Like, we looked like it was like, a total failed state in Nigeria, because the stability and what they have now.
El Rufai, Kaduna,
frankly, brilliant stuff. Yes, you can, there are parts of it that you might say distasteful, fundamentalist, and all of that, but whether you like it or not, they delivered good stuff, the sustainable, structured stuff. You need quite a coalescence of these good things to come together. I'm really hoping that sometimes I'm saying maybe the federal presidency may not be able to fix it, but if you have like 8, 9, 10 governors ripping up trees simultaneously, almost competing, because at the point in time, maybe we're going to find out what they're doing in Lagos, and you need to bring it back here and all of that. It's that kind of, it's healthy, it's positive, something to look forward to, something to be proud of, And that's what I'm saying, that, we should do the right kind of thing, and then message it the right way. Be decent, be fair, be humane. Not everything is, daggers drawn, gloves out, gloves off, and punching in. Not everything needs to be that kind of fight. You can be strategic about your fight and keep it political and all of that in that class, but for the people, give them a sense of belonging, society. I belong here, the family here. I can then express myself beyond the confines of my own small nuclear family, out there. And everybody almost tends to go back to a bit of, I'm giving, just some getting, and it's a balance. And some fairness, so somebody can just walk up and just take what you have and with impunity, stuff like that. Yeah. Some degree of accountability, it will take some time and a lot of deliberate action. But that's what I'm saying about how we do that. And it's not impossible.
All right, but we have just 9 months. Do we have enough time? The road to Aso Rock, the journey to Aso Rock, 0817-923-0002. 0817-923-0003, 0817-923-0009. The numbers to call. There are messages I will not read because they don't just add up. We'll talk about that some other time, but let's leave this alone. 0817-923-0002, 0817-923-0003. Yoyo in Borikiri believes that the APC ticket is simply invest 100 million and get 400% return on investment or money back guarantee. How do you know? These are just speculations. How do you know? 400% from where?
I don't know if it's a direct cashback, but something is going on with that ticket, you know. And I just kind of think and all that. But I mean, like, so seriously, why would the CBN, sitting CBN governor, go and try and buy a phone, go to court, try and make sure that I can get it and all that? And then I go see a meeting in Aso Rock, and Buhari scolded him and just like, you're out of your mind and all of that. And he leaves with his tail between his legs.
Well, you know, he's thinking that Buhari is a minister for petroleum. So maybe he thinks perhaps I too can, you know, do that. Ogundu is calling from Alakaya. Good morning.
Yeah, good morning. No, and good morning to your guest in the
Doctor Tika Kuntia is my guest. Go on.
Yeah, I think in human life, yes, there will definitely be deficits. And for everyone around who feel and see that these are the deficits, these are the difficulties, these are the hardship of the people, just like your guest, I think has faulted every down thing, if not possibly right from 1999 up to date. I want to ask you a simple question. Having faulted all these stuff, the government not working, primary school insecurity, name them, employment, as many as, I want to ask him, who do he think that can man the position of Aso Rock that can be able to do well in the future?
Thank you. David is in Yenagoa. David Gatwood, good morning.
Yes, greetings. I bring you from Yenagoa, Madam Enya. Now, I have listened to your guest very keenly. I think as a private businessman who has done very well in his private venture, I also believe he's given the opportunity to run this country will also do well. But however, the big tax for him is, how sure is he that he will be able to convince the delegates of his party on the day of their primaries to give him their vote? And once he obtains the party's candidature, for me, I think he's good to go. Imbri Ebate Bokoroma. Once again, my name is David West, ATM Nigeria.
David, I hope people in your neighborhood are enjoying the ATM ship that you talk about all the time. But my guest is Dr. Ntika Akintia, as a public affairs analyst. Are you running for any? Why are you running?
Not to my knowledge. And I'm not consulting, by the way.
I'm not consulting.
You're not running. You're not consulting.
I'm not consulting.
All right, I'll take some more calls. This one writes or reads, thank you, Doc, in the building up in the build up to 2023 elections, the aspirants only one job, showcase your chosen unique attributes based on track record, if any, and leave the decision of who does it better to the people making a choice. The noise obviously doesn't match any indices that prove adoption. You're simply building an echo chamber. In terms of insecurity, well, he thinks Amechi can do that because he did that I sent him the message wasn't for you. Because he did that when he was governor. Obed is in Mboba. Obed, good morning.
Good morning, Eno. Yes, Eno, for me, I've heard what your guest said. I think Nigerians need to vote beyond ethnicity. Because when you look at the whole scenario, I will say that Nigerians are the one marginalized. No sections of Nigeria that I can say that is marginalized, because every section in Nigeria have a leader who from the same jurisdiction, the same state, the same local government. So we should look beyond this sentimental and vote the right people. That is what I am feeling, because we are the one that is marginalized.
Thank you, Obed, for calling. Let's get back to Dr. Ntia. So this matter of, part of what he just talked about, representation, right? So all these people from different localities, you know, running for something, would you say over time they have represented the people that they are supposed to serve well, or they've gone in there? And some people believe that something happens when you get in there, that you become a changed person. You know, have they represented their people well?
Generally speaking, I think on the balance, I would say no. And I think something does happen. What I think does happen is that you get there, then you realize that it is not your people that sustain you there.
And that's, so your people can take you there.
Like a car
takes you, then you get on the plane, and it's a different level.
And then you don't really wonder whether the car is washed or whether the car, you know, even receives servicing. Mm-hmm. So, and even the people taking you there, there's a way that that happens, which I think one of the things that I, we may think everything is falling apart, but our elections, like it or not, have gotten better year on year. The what I call rigging window has narrowed significantly from the good old days of somebody comes and throws you 3 million votes, you know, in a state election and all that. You're like, how many people, like, everybody wake up, even the children grew to become 18 overnight. So, but to today where, you know, you see things like, you know, you're struggling with 100,000+ votes and that's it, that takes the card and all of that. So you begin to reflect, yes, there's apathy. But what I'm saying that the electoral process has to become more and more reliable. So I'm still looking to see if all of what was planned for this cycle would come through, the IPA system, things like that. That helps just in all that. So you can't sit in the hotel room and write the results anymore, things like that. So if that happens, it means that you really have to be present to do anything at all on ground. So minimize violence, things like that. Then the people have a bigger say. Secondly, then they also, if you are there and it is your constituents that determine whether you stay there or not, the attitude will be different. But if you're there and then it is the power groups and the small, you know, and all of that, your godfather and all of that, that determines whether you stay there or not, then that's all the guy you have to please. And once you think that is where your sustenance is coming from, once you do that, as far as you're concerned, you have performed and you stay forever in office. So that has to be able to change, which is why I say that if we had more parliamentary style things, it becomes a bit more local. Immediately, you're clearly not the man.
You're not
somebody in your side going to come out like, I'm running against you, and it really can become a tussle that no matter how much money you have, you may struggle if you've really done some things that are really terrible. So it would have kept it much more local. But the machinery to fight at the federal level and all of that, it's not worth money, people. Like I got talking about, I should convince my delegates. I just don't think I can, in a clear conscience, do what is required, you know, and all of that. So I'm not consulting. So
and some of those who are aspiring do not have that as well.
That's the thing. That's it. And as far as that's why I'm talking about, for example, everybody in the PC is waiting for who the hand will drop behind. And that's it. If fancy, if that is why you get on the ticket for the party that's most likely to produce, because they're incumbents, you know, so therefore they have the edge. Fancy that.
Okay. We'll have to stop now. Thank you, Dr. Ntia, for your time.
Indeed.
My name is Enoch Bevere. We'll keep our eyes on the journey and see how it plays out. Primaries, we'll see how it plays out.